Hey, we are back, and my guest now is a new author, Nellie Bowles, a reporter for the Free Press and author of a brand new book called Morning After the Revolution, Dispatches from the Wrong Side of History. Nellie, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's a pleasure to be here. I think I'm actually in your seat in headquarters.
I know, and that's how much trust I have in you. I'll let you take over that. Tell everybody how great a studio I have.
It's a great studio. They are so nice here. I'm looking at your little items. I'm trying to figure out, there's something in Russian here. Welcome to Ukraine. A cigarette. I can't quite figure it out.
Right.
But no, I'm having a lot of fun. I'm planning on staying, and I think I'm the new host.
I wouldn't doubt it. You certainly have the ability and the talent. I apologize, but this was the last minute for Law Enforcement Week. We did a big thing in the Candlelight Vigil last night. I'm going to interview the speaker today. I'll have that tomorrow. But, Nellie, congratulations on your book.
Thank you.
Talk about the changes in your career over the last couple of years.
There have been a few. I started out as a good California reporter, joined the Times, which was my dream job, and started getting in trouble when I started reporting on things that my colleagues saw as beyond the purview of a Times reporter, or kind of unacceptable to report on, especially unacceptable to laugh about or report on in a funny way. And so now I left the paper. I wrote this book, basically a set of stories that I couldn't have gotten done there and now did for the book, and then started a new media company with my wife. And we are having
Barry Weiss.
It's my wife, Barry Weiss. It's called The Free Press, and we publish a lot of stories every day. And I write a Friday humor column called TGIF, which everyone should be reading. It's very important. And that's our career now. We're sort of in the Wild West of the new media.
But you write Dispatches from the Wrong Side of History, mm-hmm. and maybe you have some regrets about the cancel culture you were in the middle of, and you thought to yourself, better of it, and does Barry Weiss deserve a lot of credit for presenting another side of this story?
I was a very good soldier of the revolution, and I think in a lot of ways, for people who are growing up in a certain community and in certain waters, it's hard to look outside of that, and it's hard to be reflective of what you're doing or what you believe and to question it. And it's not to say that I questioned it and now I'm on the other side and it's all so simple, but just to say that I looked around and I started to see the results of some of the progressive policies. I'm from San Francisco. I lived there my whole life. If you're not looking around and seeing the streets and starting to question some of the ideas that got us to that place, I think you're fooling yourself. I think you're an absolute fool if you don't do that. And so I started looking at the facts. And yeah, I write about my role to some extent in some of this. I mean, I write about canceling a friend. I was trying to think about how to capture cancel culture. And I was thinking, I'll talk to someone who canceled someone. I'll do this, and I'll do it through reporting. And I realized the most honest thing is to admit that I've canceled someone very, very
right.
specifically. I had a friend who everyone was sort of dogpiling, and I was supposed to go on stage and do an on-stage interview with her. I was a reporter at the Times, and that would have been good and helpful for her book. And I backed out, and I did it because I knew then the event would be canceled, and I knew it would harm it. And I did it because I thought I was part of a movement for the good and not thinking about it. And yeah, I write about the feelings of regret and sort of wrestling with when you do a bad thing or do a shitty thing to someone and mm-hmm. why that happened, how I got caught up in that. And anyways, that's one chapter, and I certainly don't look like a hero of the book, but I'm okay with that. I think of myself already heroically, so I don't need to write about myself heroically.
You are a superhero in your mind, as I am.
Exactly.
And when we're not on the radio, we fight crime.
Exactly.
Wherever we can. Nellie, a couple of things. You're not saying that you're a conservative or liberal. You're just saying you've learned to be more fair-minded and open-minded. For example, obviously, Governor Newsom's attack on the homeless situation has only made it worse. Obviously, you've taken one of the greatest states in the union, California, and made people apt to do everything, whatever they can in many cases, to get out of there because of the crime and because of the taxes. And you're seeing what's happening in Chicago in the city. and you're seeing what's happening in New York with the no bail policy. And even though you say to yourself, okay, it seems like a lot of minorities are in prison, I guess America is a racist country, let's let everybody out. Maybe that's not the good answer either.
Yeah, I mean, I when you're in the progressive world, as soon as you question any of it, you're called a fascist. But I just reject, obviously I reject the label, but also I just reject the premise. I think that it's okay to look at San Francisco's DA, who at the time was saying that we shouldn't prosecute crime and we shouldn't put drug dealers in jail or prosecute them because drug dealers are victims too. It's okay to look at that and say, that's absurd. That's ridiculous. Like, it's okay to look at the homeless situation, let's say, and say, okay, these are very good intentions, but why is it that the nonprofits and the leaders of the groups that are supposed to be helping the homeless are getting so rich? How is that? That's a little odd, right? Like, you're sort of and that's okay. That doesn't make you a bad person. I mean, within the left, it's sort of seen as like you can't question any. And by the way, I think this happens within groups on the right too. It just obviously isn't my community, but I'm not. I think the right does the exact same thing in a lot of ways in our time of sort of extremes. And, anyways, but in my community, I think that for a long time and still now, if you point out any of the absurdities and any of the ways in which the ideals don't translate to results that make sense based on the supposed ideals, if you point that out, you get in a lot of trouble. But I mean, the examples of this are so many. Like, the book was easy to write in a lot of ways because you're looking around and you're like, well, you've got groups of school leaders who are advocating against opening schools. You've got...
That was big, right? The pandemic was really made people take positions and really begin to question themselves for not questioning other people, correct?
Exactly. And it just doesn't make sense. And there's humor in that and absurdity in that. And there's... Yeah, it's low-hanging fruit. I mean, you've got... I have a chapter on... There are white anti-racist leaders who are trying to tell us that things like perfectionism and urgency and objectivity are white values and white traits, and that is anti-racism. That's the most racist thing you could say. That's crazy.
I mean, that
was so mainstream that the Smithsonian Museum made a poster with those attributes saying that these are white and that these are white supremacy traits. And it's like, some of the stuff now when I look back and I think and I reread parts, obviously I reread it to myself every night before bed, you almost can't believe it's real, but it was, and it is. And I think we're seeing it play out still on campuses now and on a lot of the similar sort of absurd trends.
I hear you. And in fact, you're not the only one. This has been a theme. In fact, on Saturday night, I just think the end of culture, cancel culture is clearly upon us. And it's not because a whole bunch of Democrats becoming Republicans or conservatives becoming ultra-conservatives, whatever it is. I just think the age of looking at things fairly is now going to be in vogue. And I think back to Yuri Berliner.
From your lips to God's ears.
Right, to the NPR editor. He came out and says, listen, I never voted for Republican in my life, but I'm looking at NPR and I'm thinking to myself, this is insane. Listen to what he said. As you know, he wrote this column. Then he got suspended. He said, no, you're not going to suspend me. I quit. Cut 40.
I think like every newsroom, every legacy media newsroom, we were shocked, disturbed, distraught, really troubled. We assumed Hillary Clinton was going to win and she didn't. And it was really an unsettling experience. But I also think to me it revealed that we didn't really understand a lot of what was going on in America, that we were out of touch.
And he went on with Barry Weiss, your co-editor, and your wife, Cup 41.
After a while, we started covering Trump in a way that like a lot of legacy news organizations, that we were trying to damage his presidency, to even find anything we could to harm him. And I think what we latched on to was Russia collusion, like a lot of news organizations, which was, as I write, sort of catnip, although it was just rumors and a lot of it based on pretty shoddy documents or evidence. It wasn't really solid, but I think it was compelling.
And he was upset by it. He spoke up about it, and they basically said, "Who cares? It hurt the presidency. It doesn't matter."
He's so
and I'm
brave.
Not giving you any new news. Does this go to the theme in which you the reason why you wrote the book?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, Uri is the NPR whistleblower is unbelievably brave. He was there for many years and took a big risk in coming out and saying, "We lost our focus. We lost our focus on journalism and on being honest." And it's as a writer, as an editor, like Uri was, as a writer like I was or am, it's very boring to some extent to be in a culture where everything has to be for the good of the party. Everything has to be to benefit the candidate of the moment with the exact politics of the moment. And that to go against that is to be doing something very dangerous. So like I the book starts with me trying to cover Chaz and Chop when Seattle was taken over by Antifa. And at the time, it was very important to deny that Antifa was part of BLM at all or that Antifa was having any role in what was happening in America's cities. And that was basically a consensus in mainstream media. And it just was driving me crazy. And I think for a lot of curious people who are still in these institutions, by the way, there's tons of great reporters still within NPR, within the Times, who are kind of who have been for years a little bit cowed by a group of really militant activists who want a small faction of very militant activists who want to clamp down and censor. But it's fundamentally just very frustrating to be a creative in those worlds because you can't do the stories that are most interesting to cover and write about. Like,
Nelly, tell me if this is the truth in your life. It used to be where, you know, you cover stories, you do things, and then maybe on a Friday night you go out for a couple of beers and you go, yeah, by the way, who are you voting for? Oh, you know, you might not be able to know. You actually would ask that question and not know. Now it comes out in so much of the reporting, right and left, that you don't really have to ask anybody who they're voting for or what channel they're on. You know exactly it. So
there might be a little bit of a Bernie versus Warren debate within mainstream media. You might have some battles over that.
Right, it gets heated. It gets absolutely heated. So I look back. This is what gives me hope. People like you, Mr. Uri Berliner, and I took this quote last week from Joe Kahn, the editor of the New York Times.
Yeah.
He says, "There are people out there in the world who may decide based on their democratic rights to elect Donald Trump as president. It is not the job of the New York Times or the news media to prevent that from happening. It's up to Biden and the people around him to prevent that from happening." I didn't think we'd have to read that. I thought that goes without saying.
But the fact that
they had to write it, it's crazy. But the fact that he said it is also important.
I agree completely. The fact that he had to say it is hilarious and does betray the whole thing, right? He has to say that, and it's considered controversial when he said that. And it's like, well, what are you talking about? Obviously, you're supposed to not be a tool of propaganda. Like, that goes without saying, right? But it doesn't. And I think it's a really good sign that he said it. And I think that there is now coming a, like he said at the beginning, a moderate reformation, a sort of waking up of normal people who are like, we're not these flattened extremes of one thing or another. Our politics aren't simple. The average American identifies as like exhausted more than ideological.
I'm in the exhausted party. And would you like to be my running mate?
No one wants to be, whether you're on the right or the left, no one wants to be flattened into these obsessive little categories where you have to fit every hole of it. It's ridiculous.
So listen, Nelly, a few more minutes right after the break. We'll take a short time out. That might be a good opportunity to open up one of my books, and you could take it for free, and you could say you're going to give it back and not return it. So, but I'll be back in just a couple of minutes. I'm in D.C. Nelly is in my studio. You have to go out and pick up her brand new book, which is now out and about and available for all those with a little excess income. And that, of course, is The Morning After the Revolution, Dispatches from the Wrong Side of History. Don't move.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, stay on top of the latest news and information from Fox News. Listen and download the Fox News Hourly Update on your time. The trending stories you need anytime you want it. Listen and download now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
out of the gates and ready to go.
Hey, it's Hutton Withrow. Hot Mike is here on the Outkick Network. We've got your afternoon covered with the latest sports discussion, and it's available wherever you find your audio.
Daily analysis and news. He is hot. I am Mike. Actually, my name is Chad. His name is Jonathan, but you get the picture. We're going to bring it every single day. Whatever you want to call us, we'll respond to. We just want you to respond to what we're dishing out every day.
And while you're here, we hope you subscribe to the podcast, like, subscribe, and share.
We are back. Thanks so much for tuning in. Nellie Bowles, still my guest, reporter here with the Free Press and author of a brand new book called Morning After the Revolution, Dispatches on the Wrong Side of History. And you look back at your days at the New York Times and you try to talk about how you've grown from it. But believe it or not, the New York Times did not like your book. Does that hurt your feelings, Nellie? It says, Bowles is more of a dull blade ridiculing her former colleagues by saddling them with laughably vacuous thoughts and dreams. Their beautiful vision of the role of journalism for such a beautiful time, for instance, what twits. Your response to their review?
I don't read the reviews, but I do make my partner, and I ask her to filter through. Now, of course the Times slammed it. What do you think? I mean, I make fun of the paper. I make fun of a little bit the movements that were going on within there. And the world of legacy journalists and legacy journalism doesn't like being made fun of. They don't like jokes about them. They take their work very seriously. And to call out some of the silliness is to very much put yourself as an enemy of the movement, an enemy of the people. So, no, I'm not surprised that the Times was very mad.
Well, you know who? Yeah. Okay, so I don't think it's going to hurt you. People that are going to buy your book aren't reading the Times, or they made a decision that they want to find out what you mean.
No.
And they'll buy your book.
I think that the average Times reader, I think even the average Times reporter, but I think the average Times reader certainly is a curious, open-minded person. I don't think there's enough crazy ideologues in this country to be all of those subscribers. I just don't believe it. So I think the average Times reader is open-minded and has a sense of humor and is smart. I mean, at the Free Press, the thing that we've been so surprised by, right? We started just a little blog. Really, my wife started it. And then I joined in when I saw it was getting successful. And like all good entrepreneurs. And the thing that has struck me so much is there's huge appetite for content, for podcasts and essays and hopefully for books, that there's huge appetite for stuff that isn't so ideological. And the Times reviewers and the I don't know who this person is. I didn't like look into her before coming in here. But these people are ideologues, right? They're true believers. You'll never sway them. But that's a small fraction.
Well, I just think that the Free Press is getting so much traction because people want an honest assessment and they don't trust social media. They were beginning to read it as if it was gospel. Now they don't trust it at all. And I think people are looking for a source. And your book spells it all out. Morning After the Revolution, Nellie Bowles. Nice talking to you. Congratulations on it. And I hope
Thank
to see you.
You.
We're both in the same studio next time.
It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm never leaving the studio.
I guess not. Eric, make her comfortable. Thank you. Ryan Kilmeade, Joe.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.